Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back to another amazing episode of MTG Pro Tutor. Thank you so much for joining me today. We had a fantastic weekend. Did you see any of the three Grand Prix that was going on? It was incredible. We had Grand Prix Beijing, Grand Prix Bologna, and Grand Prix Richmond. And oh boy, it was so fun to see Amonkhet Limited really shine in preparation for the Pro Tour, which is this weekend in Nashville, Tennessee, in the United States. How cool is that? So I have reached out to the top eight players of each of the Grand Prix. I was able to find most of them. It's always hard for me to find some of the Asian players from the Asian Grand Prix because I don't know, they're just on different social media or just can't understand their profiles, but I did find some of them and I reached out to them. And also I want to say congratulations to, let's see, Javier Dominguez, who is a past guest, and he made top eight of Grand Prix Bologna, so that was really cool. And also Eli Cassis, Martin Dang, and Brian Brondulin, all past guests, they were in the top eight of Grand Prix Richmond. So this is really cool. I love seeing past guests do great things. And it's actually perfect that we're talking about this because today's guest is a returning guest of the show. So far, when I make the invites, I reach out to the top eight of Grand Prix and the top 16 of Pro Tours. And if they have already been on the show, I basically have been sending them a congratulations, you're doing great, keep it up type of thing. But then I thought, you know what? It would be really cool to bring on past guests to see what they've been up to since the last time they were here. I don't know exactly what we're going to talk about because we already went over their favorites, their ups and their downs, and I don't want to just rehash the same episode. So it's a bit of a challenge to figure out, hey, what are we going to talk about when they come back on? But today we give it a shot, so I'm really excited that you're here. Let me know what you think. Let me know what you would like to hear from returning guests, people who have been on the show before. So if you want to hear their history, you can go back to their first episode. When they come back on the show, what do you want to hear? I really try and focus on what they're doing now, maybe get into more tactics and more specifics as to the certain event that they did well at recently. But let me know. I'm always up for improvement. I'm always up for suggestions. So let me know what you think. Now, before we dive into the interview, I do want to acknowledge that this episode is brought to you by the patrons. Patrons, thank you so much for supporting the show. And as promised, I'll be announcing the winner of the April giveaway. So let's give it up and congratulate Robert Thompson. Robert, thank you so much for your support of the show. You won the April patron exclusive giveaway. I'll be sending you a Amonkhet bundle coming your way. So enjoy that and good luck. Hopefully you get some great pulls and look forward to you posting that picture in the group. So thank you so much for your support of the show. Now, if you are interested in becoming a patron of the show, you can go to mtgprotutor.com/Patreon where you can choose to donate any amount you want per episode. And then you can set a monthly limit so you never go out of budget. So you can do like $1 an episode and then set a $5 limit. So that way it's only going to be $5 a month as opposed to $8. Or you can do like $2 an episode and set a $10 limit, you know, whatever works. But that's where you can go to learn more about that. mtgprotutor.com/Patreon where you can learn about that. So Robert, thank you again for your support. Congratulations. And then I also want to say that this episode is brought to you by the Deck Building Masterclass. So if you are new to the show, the Deck Building Masterclass is a collaboration I did with three of the best deck builders in the industry. AJ Soccer, Matt Severa, and Michael Majors all came onto the show to share their deck building tips. They reveal how they build tournament winning decks. It is an amazing process that I broke down into what is now called the EDH test. Evaluate, determine, hypothesize, and test. And we go into each one of those steps in detail to help you conquer any metagame. It is perfect right now because we're in a brand new standard. There's lots of things going on. And if you are able to track the trends and get ahead of the game, you will have a leg up and an advantage at your next event. So deckbuildingmasterclass.com is where you can go to learn more about that. Again, deckbuildingmasterclass.com is where you can go to learn more about this amazing free PDF download. You can go get a free PDF download there. So check that out. Wow, that's it for the topic interview. We talked about the Grand Prix, we talked about returning guests, we talked about this episode's sponsors, Patreon, and the Deck Building Masterclass. So, without further ado, let's bring in an MTG Pro Tutor veteran back onto the show, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I am really excited to bring back a guest. Our guest has a degree in mechatronic engineering, still. He's married and has a 15-month-old son, not that old. He has three Grand Prix top eights now, including a win that he got at Grand Prix Toronto in 2016. He's still better at limited than he is at constructed and is striving not to be 1 point shy of silver. Prodigies near and far, let's welcome back to the show the host of the First Strike podcast, the one, the only, Robert Lombardi. Robert, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for the intro.
Man, we are so happy to have you back. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yeah, let's see if I have anything left in the bank, I guess.
All right, man. All right. Well, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Robert, you can do so on Twitter. He's at RobLombardiZero, so you can look him up there. And as I mentioned on the show, or on the, in the intro, we had Rob back on the show before. He was episode 125 for anybody who is keeping track. And it's looking like this is going to be episode 198. So how about that? That's what, about 75 episodes. So that's pretty cool. Welcome back, buddy.
Thank you.
So I brought you back on because just recently you made another Grand Prix top eight. How about that?
Indeed. Yeah. When you're on, you're like, yeah, you know, we believe in you. You can do another one. I was like, yeah, sure.
And you
apparently
did it.
I still had one left.
Yeah. That's so cool. So prodigies, by the way, if you want to hear Robert's origin story and his favorite set, his favorite card, all that good stuff, you can go back and listen to episode 125 or check out his show notes at mtgpro2.com/Robert Lombardi. The show notes for this page will probably be like Robert Lombardi 2 or something clever like that. But anyways, yeah, so we're not going to dive into his origin story because we covered all that. But what we do want to do, Robert, is dive into, you know, what you've been up to. So we had you back on back then, and then obviously between then and now you have another Grand Prix top eight. So let's kind of bridge the gap of your story, kind of figure out what you've been up to in the last 9 months or so. And then we'll dive into some of the other things that you have going on.
Sure. So, yeah, I guess after GP Montreal, I went to PT Kaladesh in Hawaii, and we had like what I thought was a pretty decent deck, but it was really bad against Marvel, so we just got wrecked. Me and a couple other local guys that were testing together from Toronto, my team, if you will.
Yeah.
So, some of the people that played Marvel did okay, but we were on kind of a red-white mid-range deck. It was trying to go just a little bit slower than the vehicles deck, but it was just like, yeah, it wasn't fast enough to beat Marvel. So it's kind of like not well positioned for that event. Mm-hmm. But we were still in Hawaii, so scrubbing out of Pro Tour there isn't that bad. So I just kind of had like a nice little vacation on the beach. So I can't really complain. And then there was really like no real events going on for a while. So I kind of played a couple PPTQs, qualified for an RPTQ. And then... yeah, like I guess the new standard format came out. I missed Dublin. I lost in the finals of an RPTQ to a friend of mine who I convinced to play the deck he beat me with. Lent him a few cards for it.
Oh, that's always fun.
It was a bittersweet, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's see what happened after that. So I queued for the next RPTQ, or I was queued for the next RPTQ, and I ended up actually turning that RPTQ invite into qualification for PT Nashville. So I managed to squeak into the top four there, and I played the kind of Mardu Ballista deck, I guess, that had just broke that weekend at Utrecht. So I had someone that was kind of in the know early on, and they sent me the deck list, and I was like kind of waffling between like the standard decks because the metagame wasn't really quite settled at that point yet. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is absolutely where I want to be. And the deck was just completely lit. I went undefeated on the day, and I couldn't complain at all.
Nice. So let's clue in on that a little bit more. Like, we would love to know, what did that preparation, you know, look like? We're always keen on learning. What does it take to kind of set yourself up for, you know, success at a Grand Prix? And obviously, there is, you know, people say there is some degree of luck, but it doesn't happen if you're completely unprepared. So you mentioned somebody clued you in on the deck, you know, early on. But then once you had it, what were you doing? How much were you playing? What does effective standard preparation look like?
Yes. This one's kind of a weird story. I played in GP Pittsburgh, I think it was, like a few weeks before that, like right after the Pro Tour. And I took Mardu to that event. We tested a bunch like over Moto. After the decks from the PT came out, so like green black was very popular, Mardu was very popular, and like I couldn't come to a deck that wasn't Mardu that was like good enough. Basically, I was like, yeah, this deck is probably just the best deck, and the four colors Saheeli decks were like very poorly tuned at that point. They were running like Elder Deep Fiend and Aetherworks Marvel and a bunch of weird stuff like that. So I kind of just after our testing spree that week before GP Pit, I settled on Mardu and played like, you know, very traditional Mardu build with like some Avacyns in the sideboard just to kind of shore up the green black matchup. And I ended up going 11-4. I was like pretty happy with the performance, but obviously could have done a little bit better. So when the RPTQ was coming up like 2 weeks later, I was trying to figure out what, you know, kind of like what I should be on for that event. And that's when four color was really kind of picking up steam and people kind of figured out what the configuration of that deck more or less should be. So I was playing that a little bit and I liked it, but it was not quite there for me yet. But I didn't like the kind of like the red, white, splashing black version of Mardu. So a friend sent me the Dynavolt Tower list that got popular that weekend as well. I was playing that a little bit and I was like, oh yeah, this deck seems good. And then the Friday night, like at 2 a.m, another buddy sent me the Mardu Ballista deck. And I was like, yeah, I should just audible to this.
Oh my gosh.
So I didn't actually test with the deck at all. I made like two or three changes that night that I thought might be good. And then in the morning I completely reverted and I was like, no, whatever. I'm just going to stick to the exact 75 I was given. But I felt that, you know, I could afford audibling, because I was already very familiar with how a Mardu deck operates and how it should be sideboarding in a bunch of the key matchups. And when I looked at the deck list, I was like, yeah, this just makes a lot more sense. You have more artifacts, your mana is better. It's just a much better build. Plus, you're very good against the red-white Mardu list since they're playing a bunch of like motorists and stuff, which Ballista just kind of mows over. So I was very happy to have someone enlighten me in the final hour there.
I love that. Now, what were, and I know that you undid the changes, but what were those few card changes and why do you make them? And even though you undid them, I want to explore this because we've learned that even small changes can give an edge and make a big difference in a deck. So what were those changes and what were your thought process in making them?
Sure. In the board, there was an Oath of Chandra and two Oath of Lilianas. And I was like, yeah, I don't really like these cards. They're not good against four colors Tahili, which I thought was going to be really well represented. And I thought they're not good against Mardu because I was not like siding in to the mirror as a control deck with the previous build as much as like people are like with later with the Ballista versions, for example. So I didn't really see like a purpose for those cards. And I also didn't have a bunch of extra Planeswalkers in my previous Mardu iterations. So I didn't realize the value that like Oath of Liliana can actually, you know, give you over the course of a game. So I like took them out for like two Transgress and an Anguish I'm making or something like that. So I had a better matchup against like potential Marvel decks or four colors to Healy or something. And then like right before the event started, the actual like undefeated deck list from Utrecht were available. And I saw that someone had like just like the full Oath package. Like they just went like nuts with them. Full and I'm Oath. Like, maybe this is good. I think he had like three Oath of Lilianas and like three Oath of Chandras or something crazy like that. I was like, okay, I'm just going to like play a couple mirror matches with someone that was there. And I ran like two matches using the Oaths in my deck, like in the way that the person who gave me the list suggested they should be, like the sideboard configuration. And yeah, they were just like very good. Like Oath of Liliana into Gideon very much helps you protect your Gideon. And then like every subsequent Planeswalker you play after that is just gravy, right? So yeah. I was like, okay, yeah, I guess I misevaluated this card, as did I guess everyone since no one was playing Oath of Liliana until that weekend. But yeah, I'm happy I went back to that configuration. And like battling against like the Mardu Mirror when you're on the draw as like a very heavy control deck was a much better game plan than what I was set up to do at GP Pit. So I'm glad that I undid the mistake I almost made.
Okay, awesome. Now, I mean, obviously, like, there's a lot of thought that goes into, you know, these decks and the sideboard and whatnot. In your experience, what makes like a pro sideboard different than, say, your average FNM sideboard? Like, what are you and some of the other, you know, players that we see on the Pro Tour thinking and going through that maybe your average player is not?
Yeah, so I think at FNM, you kind of know the metagame a lot better because just like, oh, this guy plays that deck. This guy plays that deck. And like, depending on where you are in like your competency at Magic, you kind of know like where your competition is. So if you know that like the other people that go undefeated at your local Modern event are playing like Grixis and Malira Cord and I don't know, like Red Green Tron or something like that, on average, then you kind of like, you want to pick a deck that if you're planning on winning, you need to beat them typically, right? So you want to pick a deck that's either good against them or you want to have a good sideboard plan for that. So like, you don't really need to worry about the guy that's like 1-2 usually if you're planning on winning. Whereas like at a GP and at a PT, your board is usually like a little less targeted, right? Because you don't really, I mean, this standard is a special case, but usually you don't know exactly what you're going to play against and you need to spread yourself a little bit thin. So I think what a lot of people make a mistake on is they spread it too thin where like they're not shoring up the matchups they need to enough, or they're overcompensating sometimes on matchups that they should be shoring up more. So just like the balance of like, should like, where should I be after board? Like if I can put an extra card here, like do I get an extra 5%? Like, is that worth it? If I'm losing 10% by taking a card away from another matchup, like it's kind of difficult to like actually get to those numbers, right? But those are the kind of things you're trying to think of, right? Where it's like, okay, you know, Saheeli is like a 50-50 matchup, kind of like, you know, pre-board. Or Martyr's probably a little bit favored, but like after board, they're bringing in Ishkenaz, they're bringing in Sky Sovereign. They have a lot more Planeswalkers. And so you need to be like a lot more proactive, but you also need to have a plan that goes much more into the late game, because that's where they're looking to take you, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to have more removal. You want to have a little more like top end interaction and stuff like that. So I definitely like at the RBTU event, the deck was really like configured for two matchups. There was a configuration for Mardu and there was a configuration for four color. And then like you didn't really have to worry about anything else. Whereas like some other people at the event had like plans for Temur Tower or Temur Marvel, but like the Mardu deck in its standard build can just like kind of run over those decks anyways. So I didn't really feel the need to kind of worry about what was going on there. Like I didn't need to play, you know, the deck actually didn't need transgresses against Marvel. Like you can just beat Marvel anyways, and transgress is not like really doing anything that you need to do. And I saw like people playing like Lost Legacy and stuff like that against four color. This is like not really what you want to do, because you're like not really sure what the person across the table from you is really going to do after board. Like some people just take the combo out, some of them leave it in, and like it's very difficult to say. So you bring in Lost Legacy, you name cat and hit nothing, you're probably dead.
Yeah.
So you just want to have like a very clear game plan on what you're doing in each match. And, you know, take it from there, I guess. It's very gray. It's very gray space.
Well, I mean, no, I think that's a really good observation. The fact that in your local meta, like you know it better, like you said, it's always more often than not, it's the same couple of people who are always at the top and you know exactly what you're gunning for. But at the bigger events, it's a much wider field and you have to kind of, you know, open that up a little bit more. And that's when you really have to take the input from past events, because that's what people are going to be playing and stuff. So I thought that was great.
If you look at modern sideboards at the GP, like they're usually like 15 distinct cards just because like modern's so wide open, right?
Yeah.
And some standard formats get like that, but this one is not. There's really two decks, I guess. And it's a bad standard.
Well, I mean, which we're about to change, so that's cool. But before we dive into that, kind of move forward, you know, you mentioned all the events that you had, you know, going on between last time and now. Also, you know, you mentioned that your son was 6 months and now 15. So how do you, let's talk a little bit about, you know, life and balance and what's that been like? You know, how you've been able to, you know, keep your magic skills sharp while, you know, having a wife and a beautiful baby and all that stuff going on.
Yeah, it's been like pretty just hectic, I guess.
Yeah.
work is definitely like ramped up, and I'm very, very busy. So it's difficult to find time to practice properly. Luckily, like WotC just like front loaded all of the GPs right after the PT. So like once you were good at this iteration of standard, you could like do all of your testing up front and then just kind of like play a bunch of events like week after week. Like multiple GPs and the RPTQ and then another GP, like all within like a 5 week span. And then there's just like nothing after that.
Yeah. There was a stretch with nothing.
Yeah. It was like a modern tournament and then like a limited sealed event or like trios event or something like that. That was it. So like I'm very thankful for them for that. But yeah, it's definitely like a challenge. But I guess doing the podcast with the other guys and having like the Patreon group where like we have a group of people that are like looking to us for information, kind of like, you know, kicks our butt and makes sure that we're like actually doing something useful for them, right? So I had provided my deck list and all of my testing information for GP New Jersey like into the Facebook group so people could like kind of see that journey. And I probably wouldn't have done as much of that if I didn't have people like depending on that information or like kind of looking to have it, right? So
yeah,
definitely having that looming over my head as kind of like a side job is definitely good motivation to keep up even when you don't, you know, normally maybe you would slack off a little bit.
Right, even when you have other things going on. Yeah, totally know how that goes for sure. Yeah. So on that note, tell us about the First Strike podcast. Like, who else? You mentioned a couple of the guys. So who else are the hosts, and when and why did you start it? And take us through that journey.
Yeah. So KYT from Mana Deprived and Face to Face is kind of leading the charge. And they were like sunsetting the A-Team podcast. I guess it would have been like close to the new year. Yeah, just from like near the end of last year, I guess they were sunsetting the A-Team. And I had been on the show a couple times, and I guess people didn't hate the episodes I was on.
Nice.
And Carr was like, yeah, I want to do something that's like a lot more competitive focused. It's like more for the spiky listener, that kind of stuff. I have a couple other guys that I know that I'm well connected with that are also good and have good finishes and stuff. So I want to see like if we can kind of get this like debate style podcast where we really like pick apart serious – you know, like competitive issues and stuff like that, right? Like sometimes we go off on random community rants and stuff like that, but you know, just arguing about like really what is the best deck or like what's the best 75th card, like let's argue over the 75th card, that kind of stuff. So so yeah, the other guys are Doug Potter, he's Canadian and from out west, and then Brian Gottlieb, who lives on the East Coast. And Brian was actually the one that shipped me the Mardu deck the night before the RPTQ. So I'm glad I joined the podcast. The RPTQ might not have gone so well if I didn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have like a really good group of guys that have like very diverse skill sets with different interests. So there's a lot of different viewpoints. And then after a couple weeks, another friend of mine, Vince D'Agostino, Dagger4 on Twitter, we needed someone to kind of fill in. And I was like, you know, yeah, I know this guy. He's good at Limited. He streams a bunch. You know, he can talk into a mic. So, you know, we can test him out. He could probably fill in if we need him. So we brought him on for a couple episodes. And now he's like a, you know, kind of a regular cast member in the stable. So, yeah, it's been going good so far.
Man, I love it. Absolutely love it. So, you know, we're coming up to, you know, present time. You talked about how the standard is, you know, kind of stale with just a couple decks going on. But as of this recording, we have a ban and restrictions right around the corner. And this is what you get when you play with time travel. When this comes out, that would have already happened a couple weeks ago. And, you know, we would have, you know, had the pre-release and some new cards and whatnot. But hey, we'll talk about it anyways. So what do you think is going to happen on the ban and restriction? Anything? Do you think standard's going to, you know, get a little fresh?
Yeah, like I think the cat combo should be banned for sure.
Okay.
Like they should have banned it in the last, like after the whatever, when the last ban cycle was.
Like right when the set came out.
No. I mean, definitely they should have banned it when the set came out because they were like, oh yeah, oops, we didn't see that. And it's just like, well, you banned Splinter Twin in Modern, so how can you have this deck running around in Standard? But okay, fine. You know, they give people a couple weeks to play with it. Let's see if it's truly breaking the format and warping it. But when they had the second, like they opened up that second ban window, when they got to that point, they knew that the deck was broken and
not
was warping
anywhere.
The format, right? Yeah. So they could have banned it then, but they made some stupid excuse that's like, oh, you know, Teemer Tower is like, you know, picking up steam. And I was like, no. One deck entered a top eight of like one GP. It's not, there's still like six Mardu decks and like two cat decks or whatever, right? And then like the following weeks, it was like 4-4. I don't know. I feel like they made a big mistake. So hopefully they rectify that because the entire deck is just like contained within Kaladesh block. So mm-hmm. If they don't ban it now, like when are they going to ban it? And if this thing lasts for another, I don't know, like how long is it legal? 18 months or,
yeah.
Or
well, I mean, they're doing the 2-year like rotation and we just got Kaladesh. Yeah, so it'd be another like 18 months from now.
Yeah, so it's just like I know they printed some cards that are like seemingly good against the combo, but there were already a bunch of cards that were like good against it. Like even Mardu gets to play an aggro strategy with evasion and powerful planeswalkers, and it has Thalia and Unlicensed Disintegration in the main deck with Walking Ballista. And it's still like it was not a significant advantage. So like printing all these, and you can play Authority of the Consoles too if you felt like doing that. It's just like these cards are not good enough. The deck can still beat you, right? So printing a bunch of other options when people weren't even playing all the options that were available to them already, I don't really think that fixes the problem. So hopefully they ban it. If they don't ban it, hopefully they just unban everything they banned then. Because I feel like that would also just put all of the strategies kind of at the same power level. So like the blue-white flash deck can come back because it has its engine. the Mardu deck gets slightly more powerful. And then, like, the green-black actually has something to do again, right? So the Delirium deck comes back with Emrakul. The Marvel deck's not garbage anymore. And I think you have a real format again. Is it a good format? No, probably not still, but it's it's definitely better than the one we have.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Didn't think about that. Like, unbanning everything. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, but so we do have, you know, new cards coming out, and obviously Wizards wants us to play with new cards. So assuming that probably what the cat, because, you know, banning Planeswalkers and Standard feels bad. So if the cat goes and we get these new cards. Let's talk about that. So how do you transition into a new standard? Again, when this comes out, we would have, you know, played with the cards for a week and a half, and it's probably broken by now. But here, looking on the edge, staring down the precipice, what do you do when you're going into a new standard? Are you right now kind of looking at new cards and brewing and thinking to strategies, or what's that like?
Yeah, so I actually haven't started brewing truly at all, even though the set's been out for a week, just because I don't really know what the format's going to look like. Like, WotC could have announced the BNR on the Monday that just passed, which would have been April 17th, but they're choosing to hold off until the 24th. So, I mean, if they ban cats, then the format's completely shaken up. And like a lot of the decks from previous standard, except for Mardu, are like completely shaken up. Right? Because their configurations really need to change. Like, Mardu was already generically good against a bunch of strategies, but like green black's not going to look like it does, and Temur Tower's not going to look like it does. Marvel might look like it does, I guess. But a lot of things need to change because they don't have to, like, their removal suite's different, right? They don't have to deal with cats. So everyone can go back to the fatal push plan instead of having to like share between Grasp of Darkness and other weird options that are like, you know, not exactly as efficient or where you'd actually like to be. And then if they don't ban cat, then I'm just going to like try and build the best cat deck that's also good in the mirror. Because like 85% of the PT is going to be playing cat, I would assume. Yeah, and I'll just play that until someone on my testing team, you know, thoroughly womps me several times in a row. I'll be like, okay, maybe we should start looking at something else. But I don't know. Yeah, like typically in a new standard, I try to make some updates to the known decks already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And see if there's like anything that really is like a vast improvement over what was previously. And then I'll wait for like the first big event. So like after the SCG event, and see like where people landed in the top eight of that event. And then now you have like a metagame to play with. And then now you can kind of build a gauntlet and test them and see like what flows to the top and what changes can you make to react to what, you know, people have built. And then kind of everyone is doing that. And you just keep like kind of running through that process. And hopefully at the end of it, you come up with something that is stronger than the rest of the field by, you know, a significant proportion. If not, then yeah, I guess you just take your chances with whatever feels best. But yeah, that's kind of the process that I go through. And then once the cards are online, then we can actually start doing some real testing. But we're kind of like all, I don't know, I think probably almost everyone in the pro community just sitting on their hands right now waiting for the announcement before they're doing anything like very, very serious.
What about hopping on the MitGo beta?
Yeah, so I tried to get on the MitGo beta. I used to be a beta user, and then I guess I let my, I don't know, like
your beta-ness expire?
Yeah, like I didn't use it for long enough, and they took away my beta account. And so when I asked for it back, they're like, oh, we're full. I was like, okay. Man. So then every set, I was like, hey, can I get back on the beta? And they're like, oh, we're still full. Your name's still on the list. I was like, okay. So this time I asked them, I was like, hey, like, I'm queued for the PT. Like, lots of people are queued for the PT and using the beta.
Yeah.
It's like a pretty significant advantage, right? Yes. And they're like, yeah, you're on the list. Don't worry. You know, when we need you, we'll let you know.
Oh my gosh.
I wish you just had a better process for this. Yeah. Like, just let everyone that's queued for the PT on the beta. Like, then I don't understand like what the issue is with that. Maybe the servers can't handle the load, but you're going to get a lot of testing, right? Because people want to actually be on it and they want to play with the cards.
Yeah. So true.
And you actually have a lot of people playing with a lot of different cards, right? So
true.
I don't know. WotC does a lot of weird things.
Yeah.
So
that's
what it is.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. I mean, I love this discussion, and this will be so cool because this weekend, as of when this is released, we'll be able to see the Pro Tour and what goes on and if it's 85% cats or if there's something new. I think cats going to go because, like I said, they want you to play with new cards. Like, it's no fun. You know, they don't want to release cool stuff like Embalm and Zombies and all this cool stuff, and then everyone just still plays cat. So I think it's going to get shaken up, but we'll see.
I agree. We'll see. Like, looking at just like the like level zero, like just thoughts on cards that seem good. Like that 2-mana 3/1 that has Exert that gets +1/+3 in lifelink, Glory Bound Initiate or something like that. This card is like a deck in itself. Like, I really think it brings always watching back.
I think Zerd period brings always watching back. I'm looking at this. I'm like, oh my gosh, we need an always watching deck. Like, I don't know. I think it's I'm pretty excited about this.
It's so strong. Yeah, it's so strong. So, I've kind of built a shell for that, but it like doesn't look anything like it would look if I thought cat didn't exist, right? Because you need to like be able to deal with that nonsense because you're expecting it to be rampant, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's probably a better version of the red green aggro deck that runs some combination of Rhonas and Hazoret, and I'm not sure if both of them are good enough or just one of them is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like using Noose Constrictor to get Hellbent is probably pretty useful with like Hazoret and like the 2 mana 4/3. And you have like some decent removal options. You can, you know, Fiery Impulse can kind of make its return back to standard. But there's just a lot of fat, right? So it can put a lot of heat on the board quickly. And I think that the deck is probably pretty explosive. So I don't know if that's like better than like kind of like hexproof combo deck that was floating around kind of at the beginning of the current standard, but it seems worth testing anyways. So
absolutely love it. Who do you know, like in your group you mentioned, is the best built from scratch deck builder?
Oh, that's definitely Brian. Cool. Yeah, my podcast co-host Brian Gottlieb. He is like probably just one of the better deck builders that I'm connected to. he can think about the process about like, okay, for this matchup, I can afford to cut 4 cards, or I need to cut 4 cards, or there's 4 cards dead in this matchup. So I can put, you know, these 4 cards in my sideboard to very much help. So he's like very good, like going down these paths and coming out with like a true plan against like every strategy that is kind of like, I don't know, like gives the deck the best chance or like a sufficient chance to actually like win the matchup. So I'm not great at that. I'm glad that he is. So hopefully over like the next year or so, I can keep learning from him on like how that process works and kind of like hone my skill. Because that's definitely like, if I had any one gap in my game, it would be like figuring out your sideboard plan truly for an unknown metagame.
Hmm. Cool. Very cool. So here's one. I kind of reached out to, you know, the Prodigies and asked them what things they'd like to hear from return guests. And somebody suggested this. I thought it was pretty cool. What color do you align with philosophically? So you as a person.
Oh, philosophically.
You know, yeah. So Robert, you as a person, like, you know, who you are and what you stand for, like what color do you align with? You know,
I guess. So you guys are lucky that I read some Morrow articles before.
We can go into them if you like.
I know some of these details. Probably, I guess as a person, probably blue.
Okay.
I'm pretty logical and like to very much think things through. I think you'll probably find that with like most very competitive Magic players. They probably align blue by default. They're not very impulsive and they're like very, very calculated. I think that was like WotC's explanation why Jace is their most popular character, is that most of their player base feels that they align with him.
Oh, okay. So, okay. Yeah, and blue's also... you know, search for knowledge. It's like you can be anything you want. You know, you just have to kind of learn it, as opposed to green, which is you are what you are and you just kind of make it. So do you agree with that as well? You kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. Like if you put in the effort to do something properly.
Yeah.
Like you should come out with a you know, an improvement in your expected outcome.
Awesome. And so that's what you believe that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, very, absolutely.
Very cool.
I mean, I went through school and it was difficult. I wasn't doing well. And then I started studying and things changed. So.
There you go. There you go.
If you put in the effort, your outcome will improve.
Yeah, I have a very internal locus of control, meaning that I really feel that my actions have an impact on, you know, my life, right? My actions have an impact on my outcome. And so as opposed to people who just think that life happens to them, they just kind of go through. And I really feel like, you know, I can take, you know, matters into my own hands and I can make decisions and those decisions matter and I can kind of control, you know, my destiny, where things go based on that. And so, yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, you put in the work and you get a result.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Right. Blue is not my favorite color to play though.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. We wanted to dive into philosophically and you and how that is. That's pretty cool. So let's see, last time you were on the show, we asked about if you had any daily rituals or habits that you feel contributed to your success. You said draft daily. Are you still drafting daily?
I was doing sealed daily.
Cool. So some kind of magic
mostly,
daily.
Yeah. Mostly because I was practicing for the Mox event online, which passed I guess there was one last weekend and one the weekend before. But now I'm not really doing anything because playing this draft format is not too helpful. I'm just kind of like waiting for the set to come out on Monday. And then, yeah, I'll go back to my regular schedule of trying to get in a draft every day, or at least like watching someone that is skilled at drafting, you know, like some streamer or content maker.
And then towards the end last time, we talked about, you know, some suggestions for improvement. One of the things that you mentioned were focusing on learning instead of winning during playtesting. And so since that was right at the end, I'd like to take a few minutes to dive into that a little bit more now. So when you're playtesting and let's flesh out this idea of focusing on learning instead of winning. What do you mean by that? What are you looking for when you're going through a serious playtest session?
Yeah, so I guess what I meant when I said that was if you have two people that are trying to figure out like if one deck's better than another, or like which deck, like maybe you don't have your deck selection done and you're just kind of like running through a bunch of decks to see what feels good against what you think the metagame's going to be. It's not so much about like which of you actually win the match. It's about what information can you gain from, you know, doing all the stuff that you're doing while playing the match. So even if you like maybe get very unlucky multiple matches in a row and you lose, like that's sometimes not very helpful. But maybe, you know, the mana base configuration is like not correct, or maybe there's too many lands or too few lands, or like not it's there's too few planes, or there's too many aether hubs or whatever, right? So like even though you can get tilted because like you feel like you're getting so unlucky, like there may be some inherent flaws in the deck construction that you can actually pick up on, and maybe it's not luck. Maybe you should be playing 25 lands instead of 23 lands because you have three Abyssins in your Mardu deck or something like this, right? So it definitely frustrates me when I play test with people like that, and we're going through the process, and either they're super excited that they're winning a lot, when it's like doesn't really matter. The information's like the fact that I didn't win the game doesn't matter to me, or like I'm beating them and now they're like grumpy about it, right? And they're like being salty that I'm just crushing them. It's like it doesn't matter who wins. Yeah. We just need to find the best deck. So, but I mean, some people very, very like they're very, very competitive, right? And they very, very much value winning. But I try to abstract that from my testing process, anyways. Or you just really want to know. You want to learn, right? So you just want the knowledge from the process. So much, you're not so concerned about the results.
Yeah, that's good stuff, and I totally agree. It's all about, you know, the process and finding out what the best thing is, especially right now. Like we've been talking about, you know, we have this new cards coming out. We really, you know, got to figure out what's going on and what's good, and it's just a matter of trying things out, jamming it, and it doesn't matter who wins as long as we figure out what's a good combo, you know. So
yeah, exactly.
So are there any I don't know, you talked about a couple of cards that you're excited about, but are there any combos that you would like to explore that you see, you know, coming up, you know, other than Cat? Obviously, let's just kind of take Cat out of here so we can explore, you know, new ground. But yeah, like let's talk about if any specific combos
you've identified. Sure. So I know like in my testing process, I have a couple decks in mind that I would like to brew up, depending on kind of like how the metagame ends up looking, like that being if Cat is banned or not. Mm-hmm. So I think Gideon of the Trials is definitely worth playing, yeah. Right? Yeah. I really want to find out if he is better or not than Gideon, Ally of Zendikar. Like my initial inclination is that Gideon, Ally of Zendikar is better.
Okay.
It seems better. It looks much better. But like until you actually you know, play with it, it's difficult to tell, like, if getting this 4/4 indestructible down a turn earlier with, you know, kind of different ability suite is, like, actually useful in how the games actually play out, right? So I want to bring him into Mardu and see if it's better than Ally of Zendikar. He also, like, turns on Heart on turn 3, so it's kind of another Scrap Heap Scrounger or something like that, if you will. And then Liliana, I think Liliana is very good. I don't know exactly what kind of shell it goes into, but it's definitely very powerful. So I'd be kind of looking at decks that are playing up Nyxalis now and seeing if I can slot Liliana into that. So maybe green black, or maybe it's a better. I was playing some up Nyxalis in the board of Mardu, so I don't know if Liliana is better or not there. It's probably like not terrible if you're playing stuff like Avacyn, but yeah, she seems very, very interesting. There's a couple other cards that are definitely powerful, but I think the set is kind of like underpowered overall. Like the gods seem not insane. I think the red and green, like the green one's definitely good. The red one might be good, and the other ones are kind of like all meh. I think there will be an As Foretold deck. I'm just like not the person to build it. Mm-hmm. And then I am going to take one more swing at Paradox Engine and see if I can figure out how to build some sort of infinite mana combo deck with, like, you know, Lifecrafters, Bestiary, and Dustwatch Recruiter and stuff like that, and see if finally all of the pieces come together now that you have something like Vizier of the Menagerie as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do you do with infinite mana in Standard?
You just, like, make a huge Walking Ballista and shoot your opponent to death or something like that.
Oh, hey, that works. That
yeah. works. So I think, I don't know if you can go, like, true infinite, but I'm pretty sure you can make enough mana to just, like, machine gun your opponent.
Wow, that's actually pretty cool. Stuff. That's actually pretty cool. I like that. Oh, see, there's fun stuff. There's a lot of fun stuff. I like that.
Yeah, the comments seem not too interesting, but I don't know. I haven't looked at them too much detail. Like, Magma Spray being back in Standard is definitely huge, and that may just, like, invalidate the Mardu deck completely, depending on what the control decks look like.
Why? Just because they can burn them so early?
Just, like, that... You're like the reason Mardu was so great against control before, like something like Temur Tower, was like you had Scrap Heap Scrounger in the early game. So if you land one, it's very hard for them to exile it. I think they're playing like one or two Incendiary Flow, okay. which is like just so bad for them to like tap out on their turn to kill your 2-mana 3/2 or whatever, right? And you just follow up with like a heart or something like that. Or if you play like a turn two heart and then a turn three Scrounger, and like they can't counter it. Because that's not like very useful for them, right? So they want to flow it on their turn, and then if you untap with 4 mana and you slam Gideon, like that's also just like so hard for them to deal with. So the combination of Scrounger plus Gideon plus like all of your threats also do infinite damage was like really hard for these control decks to deal with. But if they have Magma Spray, now they have like a mana efficient way to really like deal with Scrap Heap Scrounger, right?
Right.
So. They can kill it the turn you cast it without really interrupting their game plan, which means now they have the counter spell up when you're casting Gideon instead of having to tap out on their turn to kind of like make sure they're not just dying to your current board or whatever. So
because it exiles it, right?
Yeah, it exiles it.
So it's out of there. They can't bring it back. And then, like you said, now they have the mana up to actually deal with other things.
Yeah. So I think that like Magma Spray may be one of the more important cards in the format, and it interacts favorably with a lot of stuff. So. I'm sure the control players are very happy to see that card come back.
Yeah, that's good.
And then, like, the new Anger of the Gods. What is it called? Sweltering Suns? Yeah, this card's pretty good, too. It's, like, a red-red one, deal 3 damage to each creature. What's it has called? Cycling 3. Sweltering Suns.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That's good stuff. Look at that.
Yeah, this card is definitely good. Like, Anger of the Gods was a card you're, like, always kind of cautious of running in your main deck. You had to, like, be very sure that... it was going to be useful in most matchups in game one to kind of do that. But like this card just allows like red blue control or Jeskai control or Grixis or something to like run two of these main deck with like almost zero cost when they face a control deck or some mid range deck where it's not going to be useful. So yeah. Depending on how the creature suites of these decks look, like I'm sure the white weenie deck is not happy that card exists.
No, not at all. I mean, they didn't like any of the guys either. So, cycling. I mean, were you around last time cycling was here?
It was.
Okay. So, tell us about that. Like, I mean, obviously it's good because it's cool to have a card. Oh, I don't need it right now, so I'm going to cycle it. But are there other... Talk to us a little bit about cycling and just how good it is, I guess.
Sure. So, in Constructed, I'm not sure how good some of these cards are going to be with cycling. I don't know if it'll make a huge impact.
Okay.
But in Limited, it makes an immense impact. So kind of like from Cons where you had morphs. Mm-hmm. So like you always had a good play on turn 3, like because there's almost always morphs in your Cons decks, right? Mm-hmm. So everyone was kind of doing something on turn 3. So they had something to do with their early mana, and then all these morphs could unmorph, and they had something to do later in the game with their with more mana, right? Or they could just cast their threats from their hand. So like. It allows the games to go longer, and it makes sure that, like, I guess the variance is smoothed out just a little bit, which I think makes for a much more interactive and better limited experience. You have more people, like, losing just to getting mana screwed, and you have more people, like, losing just to getting flooded out, just because, like, you have all of these things to do both in the early game and the late game. So cycling kind of has the same effect, where... if you're mana screwed or you have a card that's situational, that's like ineffective at the current time or maybe ineffective in the matchup, then you can just kind of get rid of it at sometimes a pretty low opportunity cost. Like some of these cards cycle for like blue or white or whatever. And some of them for 2 mana. which is like, you know, reasonably low. I mean, the one mana ones are very low. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they just allow you to kind of like give your deck a little more velocity, and throw away stuff that you don't need, right? Like if you missed your fourth land drop, you know, you can cycle something and try and so like a card like Winged Shepherd, for example, is 6 mana, 3/3 flying vigilance, and then you can cycle it for a white. A 6 mana 3/3 flying vigilance is definitely not good, but a 5 mana 3/3 flying vigilance is like borderline reasonable. Like sometimes you'll play that card in your deck, and if it was 4 mana, it'd be very good. So you would just never put this 6 mana, you know, flyer in your deck in any normal circumstance, unless like you know your draft went bad or something, or there's some weird matchup where it makes sense to do that. But the fact that it has cycling white means that, you know, if you're in the early game and don't have any plays, like, I don't know, you have no 2-drop or something like that, but you have some reasonable 3-drops and 3 lands, like, you can just cycle this on turn 1. Or if, like, you're stuck on 4 lands, you can just cycle it and try and hit your 5th land drop. Or if you just, like, kind of draw it late, or you naturally just get to 6 mana, like, playing a 3-3 Vigilance is also just fine. Mm-hmm. A 3-3 Flying Vigilance, sorry. Like, it's definitely difficult to deal with, and it's going to beat down. So... just that like so much flexibility, right? Yeah. And then I guess like constructed cards like Sensor, 1 and a blue, and then counter target spell unless this controller pays 1 and you can cycle it for a blue. Like this card's just like never gonna make it in your deck if it doesn't have cycling, right? And I hear a lot of the pros like talking on Twitter and looking at their articles and stuff, and it looks like they're very excited about this card, right? Because it's a very low opportunity cost to put into your control deck and gives you like a 2 mana counter spell that makes your opponent play very weird after they've seen the first one. Yeah. So they're now like playing behind curve or like casting stuff by tapping out at risk, right? And if they're playing behind curve, like you're probably also fine with that in your control deck, right? Because now they're not using all of their mana. And then when these become useless, you can't counter anything, you just cycle them for a blue, right? Which is also just very, very reasonable. So, yeah, like cycling is definitely sweet. I wish WotC would use it more, yeah. But I'm definitely glad it's back. And hopefully it makes for a very interesting standard gameplay and also very interesting limited gameplay. And then they realize that they should use it a little more frequently than they currently do. Yeah. Like it's kind of like gives the same value as Scry, right? Just yes. Makes the games go smoother, yes. Makes sure that people are less likely to do nothing.
And it does that thing where... when you present choices to a player, that's good, because part of what makes a game fun are the choices you can make and the possibility of making the wrong choice. And then the more advanced players tend to make the right choice more often, and the less advanced players, you know, don't. And so it's really neat because adding something like that, giving players a little bit more options, just opens up the game so much more. I think it makes for a very rich environment. So
yeah, for sure. And then they like in limited, like they also have Embalm. So the fact that you're more likely to be able to hit your land drops when you're flooded and you're kind of playing these more expensive cyclers anyways, means that you'll more likely have mana to actually trigger your Embalm stuff later. So I think it's going to be a pretty slow limited format overall. So if it's anything like cons, I think it's going to be very fun. So I'm kind of excited to get into it and see if that assumption's correct or not.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, kind of looking to, you know, the future, you've been doing Magic and you're on the Pro Tour and whatnot. What do you think of the new like Pro Tour team system? And then in general, where do you see the future of Pro Magic going?
Sure. So I think the new team system is definitely good for people that are regular stalwarts of the PT. I think it makes it more likely that Magic can get to a state where these people can focus on Magic at a level where you need to be very good and consistently good, while also like making a decent living for yourself, which is not exactly true currently. Like there's a couple people that do okay, but on average, like if you spent your time doing almost anything else, you would make more money, right?
Yeah.
So that has it against it. So I think the pro team structure and the sponsorships and how all of that works and kind of the rejigging of the pricing structure is like a very good first step to enabling that future state to be like a possible truth later on. So I think they're doing a good job there. For me personally, like the pro team structure isn't good because I'm not like a PT regular on average, I guess. Anyways, this year I am. I qualified for three of four,
nice.
But my qualifications were first and then third and fourth. So because I missed the second one, like I didn't really have an opportunity to team up with anyone because everyone who didn't really have a team in the first one definitely wanted to make a team in the second one because that was kind of the deadline to do that.
Oh, yeah.
So like everyone I know is kind of like locked up, and everyone that I know that's not locked up is like not queued for anything or not guaranteed to be queued. So it's like very weird. Like there's almost no benefit for me to even pretend like it's useful to do that. And it's not like I'm going to get any useful sponsorship from anything like that anyways. Right. Because like our sponsor wouldn't be able, like we wouldn't be able to guarantee that we're all going to be there, that we're going to do anything useful.
Right.
So it doesn't really like work out for, I guess people just breaking into the scene so much, unless you're like, you know, on a very, very hot run and like hit gold real early in the season or platinum or something like that.
Yeah.
So for people that are below silver, yeah, it's just like kind of inconsequential. Doesn't matter too much. But I guess your second question was kind of like, where do I see Pro Magic going? So I hope that at some point they're able to actually use the digital platform at the PT in some way, whether that be maybe like just in the top eight or maybe just on day two or something. I'm not sure exactly how it would work, but it makes for like a, I mean, not with the current client, obviously,
yeah.
But if you assume this future state where you had like an equivalent graphic experience like you do in Hearthstone with a Magic client, it would be much more interesting to watch that on stream than it is to watch like people just kind of like play a card and turn it sideways, right?
Yep.
It's like no interesting visual elements. So I don't know whether that's actually like using like Modo, like V5 or whatever that has these rich experiences in it in the top eight, for example, or like they've partnered with Twitch. So maybe they can do like some fancy graphics editing, like in line with the video, mm-hmm. where, you know, your screen grabbing the card and then kind of, you know, like, I don't know, the camera system and the backend system knows what the battlefield is. And it's like post-processing it to make it look a lot more interesting and a lot more rich, right?
Right.
So even though the cards don't have any graphic elements on them, you can like overlay a bunch of stuff that makes it look like it's animated or I don't know, just something more interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least more visible. Sometimes you don't even know what card's on the battlefield. So I hope that that's kind of where they take that, like the pro tour and the pro tour experience. And I think once they get there, then you'll have people that weren't interested in Magic interested in actually watching it, right? Because then it's actually like an enjoyable experience to watch what's going on, even if you don't really know exactly or you're not heavily invested, right? Because
yeah.
Now, like if you look at the viewer numbers, it's really just like people that are interested in like, okay, who's playing what cards, what's doing well. Like that's the information they want out of it, right? It's not like, oh, wow, this is like so great and interesting to watch.
Yep.
That's not where it's at. So I think if they get there, then the audience will expand. If the audience expands, the game will expand, which will allow more lucrative sponsorships,
right.
which can then grow the pro community. And you have people that are like actually professional Magic players that are making a decent yearly wage on average, kind of like how the other esports are doing it. So I hope we can get somewhere. I don't know really what the best path is, but just something useful so that we can get to that future state.
Yeah.
That everyone else is kind of living.
Love it. Absolutely love it. And as we pull into the home stretch here, I want to remind the listeners that you can find Robert on Twitter. He's at RobLombardiZero. So look him up there. And also on the First Strike podcast. So go look up that podcast and listen to more of his discussions and deep dive conversations with the other co-hosts on competitive Magic and community topics and things like that. So awesome.
Yeah, if you want to hear me just go off on WotC on a weekly basis, then tune into the podcast
that's
Monday
where to
nights
do it.
At 9 p.m.
There you go. Perfect. So Robert, as we close things out, what is one last parting piece of guidance, either something you already said you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end?
Oh yeah, let me think about this. I'm not sure I have any interesting tidbits that are enlightening. I think I said last time you should be kind to your opponents. Let me think for a sec here. A lot of people they ask for feedback or criticism from people that they either trust or they want their opinion on something, right? So like, hey, look at my sealed pool. Do you think I built it correctly? or like, did you watch my match? Do you think I made any mistakes? And then when you tell them, you know, your opinion on it, they just like kind of argue with you about whether or not you're right or wrong. And like, that's fine to a point, but when it happens every time, that kind of like shows there's more of a systemic issue. Cause like, if you're asking for someone's advice, that you think is better than you, like on average, their advice is probably correct. Right. Mm-hmm. But if your default stance is that the person better than you is wrong and you're right, then either you're not worse than them and you're asking people, the wrong people for advice,
okay,
right. Or you're not taking feedback well. So I think a lot of Magic players really like to just hear that the line that they think or the line that they took is correct or whatever their thought is. They just want validation that it's correct. So when they're asking for someone's opinion, they actually just want like a confirmation that their thought process didn't have any flaws in it. And when you provide like an alternate argument, it's like very, very much angers them. And it's difficult for them to kind of see through that or accept that maybe their stance was wrong. And I think like lots of people have this issue. But if you're like really striving to get better and you notice that you're at a cap in your, I guess, performance or your ability to achieve, like maybe you're at FNM and you're like constantly 3-1-ing, but you can like never break out into 4-0, or you're doing, you know, you go to a bunch of GPs and you're constantly not day twoing, or you're day twoing and you're constantly not top eighting. But like every time you're asking people for their opinion on your play or your deck choice or some decision you've made, and you're arguing with them, probably your problem and the reason why you're capped is that you're just not listening enough. So I guess my advice is to listen to the people that you trust their opinions and actually like think deeply about whether or not you really do disagree with what they said, or your question was really just trying to validate that your opinion was was right. Because I find that a lot. And you know, once people get into that state, it's almost hopeless for them to level up.
That's so true, Robert. Thank you so much. It's just so true. Thank you so much. I want to acknowledge you for your contributions again to the multiverse. Like, you are amazing. Just have a good mind and so willing to share your experiences and your thoughts. So thank you. You are a hero amongst planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you.
Robert, thank you so much for being on the show. I loved having you here. It's just a blast chatting with Robert. He's so great. His laugh and his enthusiasm is so infectious. It's just so fun to have positive people on the show. So Robert, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you so much. Prodigies, you can find the show notes. His original show notes are at mtgpro2.com/Robert Lombardi. And that's where you can go to learn his favorite card, his ups and downs, the biggest mistake that he sees players make and how we can avoid it. All that stuff that we normally talk about is at mtgpro2.com/Robert Lombardi. This episode will be at mtgpro2.com/Robert Lombardi 2, the number 2. So that's my super clever naming convention for return guests. We're just going to throw a number 2 on the end of there. So Robert Lombardi, the number 2, Robert Lombardi 2 is where you can go to get the show notes for today. So thank you so much for joining us. I want to congratulate again Robert Thompson for winning the patron exclusive giveaway for April. I'll be sending an Amaket bundle, and you too can be considered in all future drawings by going to mtgprotutor.com/Patreon, where you can learn more about that. And also, this episode was brought to you by the Deck Building Masterclass. If you want a free PDF download of how to evaluate any metagame and move forward with confidence, then go to deckbuildingmasterclass.com, where 3 of the best deck builders in the world reveal their tournament-winning deck building secrets. So, sounds like a pretty good thing to check out, right? deckbuildingmasterclass.com. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am super pumped for this week. We have a pro tour this weekend, which is always fun. Can't wait to see what comes out of there. But before that, we have another episode coming out. And next week, a week from today, in fact, is episode 200. And I'm starting to formulate what I think will be a pretty cool episode, but we shall see. I guess time will tell, right? Back in episode 100, I was interviewed, which was a lot of fun, but I don't really feel like we can do that again since it's already been done. So episode 200, I'm trying to come up with something else. So stay tuned for that. It's really neat. Thank you so much for sticking with the show. It's great to hit this milestone together, and I cannot wait for it. But I'm also really pumped for all the great guests that we have coming up, so stay tuned. Thanks so much for joining me today. I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.